ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hello. Are you back at work now? How's your re-entry going? In the holidays, you might have had time to get to know yourself again. Maybe remind yourself who you really are. And now you're wondering, how can I carry this through the year and not lose myself again at work? Lisa Leong here for This Working Life, helping to make your work life better. Love to hear from you. What are you trying to do differently at work this year? Our email is thisworkinglife@abc.net.au. Now, this is Sue from Melbourne.
So being self-employed, I find that a lot of the time I'm psychologically always on. And I would love to be able to just take a little step away from that and chill a little bit more.
So that's Sue who responded to my question on LinkedIn. What do you want your working life to look like this year? And what do you want to do differently? To help you get started on mapping out your year at work, I'm joined by Dr. Kelvin Wong, clinical psychologist and senior lecturer at Swinburne University. Welcome, Kelvin.
Thanks for having me, Lisa.
Kelvin, why do we experience uncomfortable feelings at the start of the work year?
Yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with the cognitive dissonance or the mismatch we feel after coming from the holidays. So when we are, you know, during our holidays, we have this really idealized self, right, where we've got a lot more time, a lot more control over our lives, but then suddenly we're thrown back into work where we lose that, essentially, yeah.
And so what's this cognitive dissonance? How does that actually work with that?
Yeah, so it creates a mismatch between expectation, so our holiday selves, and realities, our work selves with all the responsibilities and the less freedom and, you know, sort of the loss of the holiday, you know, the emotions that come with that. And that mismatch causes a psychological discomfort, right, which can come up as frustration, anxiety, and sadness.
So that's why we're feeling a bit off. So how might we reframe this perspective on being back at work and getting the humdrums?
Yeah, so I think it's important to reframe it as not a loss, right? So sometimes it might help to see, okay, I'm going back into work, I'm going back into a routine, a schedule, and that's not a bad thing, right? Having a little bit of routine, knowing what's coming next.
Okay, so we start and then we start to set goals, don't we? Because we think, well, I want to do things a little bit differently. I want to achieve something different for myself. Why do we do this? Why do we go to goal setting?
I think it's very natural to goal set because we goal set ideally to be in line with what we value in life. As people, we have our particular values that guide us as people and guide us to, you know, even wake up the next day. So setting goals that align with our values makes a lot of sense. So, you know, if I value social connection, then I would want to set attainable goals that allow me to achieve that, maybe going out for drinks with friends on the weekend or something like that.
Now, apparently you've got a great metaphor which involves a pot and a garden. Say more.
It's a bit early. Let's see if I can get it right. So the idea here is that, you know, to live a fulfilling life, right, you imagine your life as a garden, right? And the values that we hold are the pots in the garden, right? So imagine if you only had a garden that had one pot in it. Let's just say, you know, you just really focused on work performance and you're nurturing it, you're making sure that it grows properly, but it's still only one pot. You wouldn't call a garden that has one pot plant in it really a garden or a fulfilling life. And so the idea here is that, you know, sometimes, you know, whether it's the changing of seasons or anything like that, or disease, your pot might wither or not be as healthy. And so what's really important is to buffer that with multiple pots, with multiple values. So whether or not that's family, whether that's ambition, whether or not that's social connection, all that makes a more rich and fulfilling garden.
Unfortunately, my garden just is filled with weeds. If I did have some beautiful flowers, then that might work for me.
That's right.
Now, tell me some examples then about how that might relate to work and how we might plan for it then.
Yeah, I think, look, if you're at work and you have a value of potentially promoting yourself, or, you know, you want to achieve a promotion this year, then you might want to set a couple of goals that are really attainable. So whether or not that is talking to your manager, even at the very start, to decide what are the things that I need to do to achieve that by the end of the year.
Now, some people do say that goal setting is a little bit unhelpful because it puts us in a state of always failing at something. Mm. What's your response to that, Kelvin?
So my response to that is I think you need to set attainable goals, right? And you need to set very concrete steps, and you need to make sure that not only do those goals align with your values, but often align with multiple of your values.
You're listening to This Week in Life on ABC Radio National with me, Lisa Leong. My guest is Dr. Kelvin Wong, psychologist from Swinburne University. There's a message from Kate, long-time listener, first-time caller. I love that, Kate. Kate writes that she wants to be more present and look out for opportunities for some side hustles that complement her day job. What is she doing differently? Continuous quality energy overbursts, she writes. She's making it happen by starting with the 5 a.m. club and dry January. Thanks, Kate. That's very impressive. Now, I want to introduce you to behavior scientist and creator of the Tiny Habits Method. It's Dr. BJ Fogg from Stanford University. Hello, BJ.
Hi, Lisa.
So I'm going to set the scene for you, BJ, because you're all the way in the US. So in Australia, we have a long summer break, and some people even take off a month. So imagine beach time, long lunches with friends and family. And for many, we're just starting to come back to work now, and we're basically thinking, I don't want to end the year the same way, overwhelmed and overworked. I'm going to change things. So, and then we set unrealistic goals. So your whole research and philosophy is tiny is mighty, which I absolutely love because I'm 4'11". But for those who don't know your approach, why, BJ, is tiny mighty?
Because you can be really consistent. If you make a habit really small, really easy to do, you can do it every day without high levels of motivation. So there's a connection between the harder the behavior, the harder the habit. In other words, the more motivation you need. And our motivation goes up and down. That's, we're human beings. That's how it works. When our motivation drops, we can't do the big things, but we can do the tiny things.
And this is a really tiny thing that has big impact, because most of us may have read or picked up a self-help book on the holidays. Mm-hmm. And you sort of call this the information action fallacy. So why might just reading a self-help book actually not do the trick?
Well, I think people will know my answer, so it won't be very groundbreaking. But you got to like take steps. You got to put it into action. And part of the Tiny Habits Method, and I've coached over 60,000 people personally, starting in 2011. That includes James Clear in 2013, and he went on to write Atomic Habits that incorporates some of my work. But you've got to take steps forward, and the Tiny Habits Method is so easy. You don't have to like have tons of time or tons of energy, and you don't have to be perfect. That's part of the method, is you just design something, you try it out. If it works, you keep going. If it doesn't, you revise. You learn from that.
Phew. So, BJ, we've asked This Week in Life is, what do you want to do differently at work this year? And here's Sue from Melbourne.
So being self-employed, I find that a lot of the time I'm psychologically always on, and I would love to be able to just take a little step away from that and chill a little bit more. What am I trying to do differently? Well, for me, that would be looking at working in chunks.
Okay, BJ Fogg, where should Sue start using the Tiny Habits Method?
Yeah, if I had to just guess at one thing, it's really hard for somebody on the outside to say, Sue, here's what you should do. And I'm going to make a guess. That's what you have me here for. Sue, I would have a way of turning off your email, your work email, and your work phone calls at a certain point in your evening, and you do not go back to it. So maybe it just means turning off your phone entirely or closing down an account or something like that. So in other words, you just do something very tiny that then leads you to not think, I got to check my email, I got to answer this phone call, and so on. That would be my guess for you.
And the interesting thing is that you've picked a specific behavior. So it's switching off the phone here. So why do you always start really with behaviors as opposed to something like goals?
Yeah. Well, there's a connection between, and Kelvin talked about this. You know, Sue has an overall, and I would call it an aspiration. And then you can achieve that by doing specific things. And in this case, something tiny. You turn off your phone or you put do not disturb on and you do not check it again. And Sue, I'm going to predict that over time, that little nagging voice in your head will get quieter and quieter and quieter until once you say, I'm done with work, and you go on do not disturb or however you turn that off, it's done. And it doesn't come back until the morning when you decide to turn it back on. Now, the reason I boil everything down to behaviors or actions, and a few of their repeated automatically habits, I'm using those somewhat as synonyms, is because that's where the action happens, right? You need to know specifically, what am I going to do that will help me not be in work mode all the time? There's 20, 50, maybe 100 different things you can do, Sue. And among them, find the one that works for you. I made a guess out of that set of, let's say there's 50. I made a guess for you and for others listening. If that doesn't work, try something else.
And why shouldn't Sue turn to something like motivation? Why is that not helpful in and of itself? Because I know it's part of the action here.
Well, there's motivation already here for Sue and other people like Sue. It's like, you know, I'm just at home with my kids or my spouse and I'm just not totally present. So there's motivation already in the system. If you pick a behavior that's really hard to do, like at the end of every day, I'm going to write a out of office message and I'm going to post it. And it's going to take 5 minutes and you have to think hard during those 5 minutes. You won't do it reliably. But if it's something as simple as I'm going to go on do not disturb mode, click, click, done. So the easier the behavior, the more likely you are to do it. That comes directly out of the FOG behavior model in my work. And I'll just switch out a word here. The easier the habit, the more likely you are to do it.
And that's where motivation does play a role, doesn't it?
Yes. And for the habits that you pick, you need to already have motivation inside you that you want to achieve this outcome or this aspiration. You want to not always feel like you're in work mode. So it's already there. So, but the behavior itself, the habit itself that you pick needs to be super tiny so you can do it very easily every day without fail.
You also said that she should do it as the last thing she does every night, switch off her phone. Why did you choose last thing? What's it got to do with the prompts, for example?
Maybe I misspoke on last thing. Just when you decide you're done, you know, after I, you know, get on the bus or get in my car to commute home or wherever it fits in your schedule, have a very specific time where you're like, I'm done. In my own life, I'm mostly on email. And so there's a very specific time when I put my computer to sleep and I never look back. I never look back. I never think about, let me go into my phone and check my email. In fact, I'm not even sure I can do email on my phone. That's how far I've taken it. And so I shut it down and it's done. And then in the morning, I launch it. So Sue and others, you just have to find that moment in your existing routine where you take that action to get out of work mode and don't look back.
Now, we've got a text through here. Hi, Lisa. Hi, BJ. What advice can you give to those who are self-employed in a small business, much harder to switch off? Thanks, Mon, from Far West New South Wales.
Yes. You know, in addition to Stanford, I've run my own companies and ventures since the 80s, so a long time. It takes a little more work, but you can do it. I used to work so much and on the weekends and so on. And finally, I just decided, no, I got to draw a line, and it takes a little more work because, you know, running your own business, you're kind of always, you know, the holidays come and you're like, what holiday? I'm never on holiday. I'm going to advise you just draw the line and get really good at that. You may need to, in the weekends, peek in at email, but have a time in the evening or late in the day where you draw the line and you do not go into work mode again until the morning.
So it all sounds like you have a bit of a recipe. I know that you do. Can you let us know what your recipe is for tiny habits so that we can try this out ourselves?
Oh, on this one?
Just your general recipe.
Well, I'll give you a specific one. After my husband says dinner is ready, I will put my computer to sleep and I'll go join him. So now we eat, Lisa, at 4 o'clock. We've moved up the time. And that's okay. I thought things would go awry, but no, they've gone really well. So as soon as he says, yeah, dinner's ready, that's my prompt to put my computer to sleep and put it away and I don't look back. So that's how it works in my life.
So there's that trigger moment or the anchor moment, as you put it, after my husband says it's dinner time. The new tiny behaviour was I will then do this new habit. And then we celebrate a little at the end. Why would we do that, the celebration?
You know, the way habits work is they form because of the emotion we feel. It's not repetition that creates a habit. People that tell you that either are, they don't know how it works or they're misleading you. It's not 66 days. It's not 21 days. It's not sheer repetition. It's the emotion you feel. So when I put the computer to sleep and I have this sense of relief, that good sense, the deeper and stronger I feel that emotion, the faster the habit wires in. When you look at habits in your life, both good habits and bad habits, they wired in because of a net gain in positive emotion, either a sense of relief or a sense of success. And the stronger that sense, that feeling is, the faster the habit wires in. So for Sue and others that are like, okay, I'm going to put my computer to sleep, in that moment, try to really feel that sense of relief, that freedom. And don't push it away. Embrace it. That will help wire in that habit. If somebody's trying to floss, for example, I'll pick a different one, and you just floss one tooth, make it really tiny, look in the mirror and say, good for you, right? So you want to purposely self-reinforce through emotion.
You're listening to This Working Life on ABC Radio National with me, Lisa Leong. My guests are behaviour scientist BJ Fogg and Dr. Kelvin Wong from Swinburne University. What are you doing differently this year? You can send an email to thisworkinglife@abc.net.au. This one from Karen in Inverloch, Victoria. Hi, Lisa. This year I want to have intentional encounters with people rather than just thinking social connection. Also, I want to swim 0.5 kilometres daily. A quarter of that against the tide. Currently, I only swim 0.25 kilometre with the tide. BJ, any comments on Karen's?
Yes, I love this. I think the year of 2025, at least for us here in America, US, because it's crazy here, is about developing strong social connections. I think that's what can get us through a lot of the tough things. So I love this. Within Stanford, I'm in the School of Medicine on behavior change. And within that, it is about social connections. I'm going to give you two specific habits. Again, I'm kind of guessing out of 100 or in this case, hundreds of habits you could do to boost the social connection. If you're meeting a stranger for the first time, what I like saying is, what's your story? Now, I don't know how that would come across in Australia, but then people are invited to tell you stuff. And then you say, that's interesting. Tell me more. People love talking about themselves, and as everyone knows here, if it's somebody that's close to you and you encounter them, give them an opportunity to say something positive about themselves. So one thing might be, wow, what went well for you today? Or what was your biggest success of the day? Now, there's 20 different ways you could ask a question like that, but what you're trying to do is get them to share something positive with you and, in fact, brag about their day. And then you say, you know, then you respond to that in a genuine positive way. One of the keys in relationships is that people feel safe and that people feel uplifted. One of my classes at Stanford was all about this. I wanted my students to be the source of positivity for other people in their lives, to help those people, but also to help my students build their social relationships. So think about, how do I help this, my spouse or my mom or my child, feel successful? Invite them to share something that went well or something they did great, or what's your biggest win of the day?
And I think tone is so important here. So of course we could ask, what's your story? But if you kind of say, what's your story? Then they might think it's aggressive. But if you say it in a curious manner, then that might work as well. Thank you, BJ. I've got this one as well. So Constance writes in to say, she has the opposite problem. She struggles getting into work mode. So how do you flip that, BJ?
Well, again, there's many ways to do this, but I'm gonna pick one. As you wrap up your day, write down three really easy different things you can do back on your work project. Like easy things, not like open a blank, document and start. No, it's just like go change the headers in this document. It's ideally you'd make like a list of three of those. So then when you come back into work mode, pick any one of those and get going. So in other words, you make getting back into work mode like going down a highway. The on-ramp isn't going up, it's going down. It's just so easy to take that first step. But you prepare for that on the previous day, at the end of your workday, say, oh, here are things I could do right now to tie up loose ends, but no, I'm just going to jot them down because tomorrow morning I'm going to start with one of these, whichever one I feel like.
Thank you, BJ. Now, as we reach the end of the show, I'm going to ask you, and you've got 30 seconds each, to share with us, Kelvin, what are you planning to do differently this year?
I think I'm going to plan on increasing my social connections, and BJ has been very inspiring in that regard. So being very intentional, going out with my dog, meeting people intentionally that way.
What's your story, Kelvin? And BJ Fogg, same question for you. What are you planning to do differently this year?
I'm saying no a lot more often, but I said yes to you, Lisa, and I'm so glad. But yeah, just say no. Just say no and save my time for the high priorities in my life. That is hard to do, but I need that this year. And so I am trying to get over the guilt of saying no to invitations and requests for my time.
I love that. And can you go over your recipe one last time, BJ?
Oh, which one? The stop working recipe?
Oh, well, just there's a general recipe for how to create a tiny habit so we can all try. Yes.
Yeah, I'll just give the template. After I brush, I will floss one tooth. So you pick an existing routine, like you're brushing your teeth or your husband calls you to work or calls you to dinner. And then what comes after it is the new habit that's really, really tiny. So after my husband says, dinner's ready, I put my computer to sleep. After I brush, I floss one tooth. After I get on the highway, I call my mom, I dial my mom. So what you're doing is designing the new habit into the set of routines you already have. You find where it fits naturally.
Beautiful. And this text just came through from Dale. Last year, I broke a lifelong workaholic habit. 12-hour days, 6 to 7 days a week was normal. Then there was illness and collapse. Now I work 3 days a week, around 6 hours a day. I play with my hobbies and family the rest of the time. I feel great. I did it. Well done, Dale. And we're doing the successful celebration for you here. Big thank you to my guests, behavior scientist and creator of the Tiny Habits Method, Dr. BJ Fogg from Stanford University, and Dr. Kelvin Wong, clinical psychologist and senior lecturer at Swinburne University. For this week, I really want you to try this. Pick one behaviour you want to change at work this year and make sure it is tiny. I want you to find an anchor moment. So we were talking about maybe it's the last thing you do in the day. Maybe it's when somebody says it's dinner time, the thing that happens just before you do your new tiny behaviour. I want you to identify how you're going to celebrate immediately after doing this new tiny behaviour so that you really lock it in. And then we do it all as a recipe. So it's an ABC recipe, anchor, behaviour and celebration. Try this week. Do the tiny habits recipe and let me know how you go. This Working Life at abc.net.au or on LinkedIn. And there are free Tiny Habit recipe cards that you can print out, and we'll put up a link to it in our website as well. And thanks for listening to This Working Life with me, Lisa Leong. It was produced by Michelle Weeks and engineered by Matthew Crawford, who also made our new power walking theme music. We're on the lands of the Wurundjeri people in Naarm, Melbourne. And meet me here again next Friday, live from 11 o'clock Eastern Daylight Savings Time. Email me if you live in a different time zone and want to listen real time, because I've got a little hack for you. And if you haven't already, search for This Working Life on the ABC Listen app and tap the heart to follow all of our stories. We'll put up another question as well on LinkedIn next week for you to ponder as well. Until then, love your work. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.